action movies rule. It's because when action directors yell action, they really mean it. If you're a fan of ass-kicking action films,
you and me, we know so different.
Whether it's the absolutely thrilling one-liners,
you're a funny guy, Sally. That's why I'm going to kill you last.
The interesting gender politics.
This hit lady's charm will break both your arms. She's a one-mama massacre squad. Yeah.
That's as good as any man I've ever seen.
And the even more interesting plot lines.
An army of international terrorists has landed. Only one man stands in their way.
They're always wickedly entertaining. If you love action movies like we do, you'll love our new book, Mine's Bigger Than Yours, The 100 Wackiest Action Movies.
Come on, punk!
Oh, I know what you're thinking. Mine's bigger than yours, right?
In true action movie form, it's
coming soon,
but is available for pre-order now on Amazon. Buy a copy, and we won't be forced to commandeer a chopper and hunt you down with a bunch of ex-Special Forces ops. Thanks. From our downtown Toronto headquarters, here's episode 320 of the Really Awful Movies podcast. The launch of our new book, Mine's Bigger Than Yours, The 100 Wackiest Action Movies. Now, we've been teasing our new book on Amazon, where it's available for pre-release, and as of November 18th, it's available in physical retail, provided those stores don't die because of COVID. But we'll be in Barnes and Noble and major retailers in Canada, the U.S., the U.K., and Australia. But we urge our listeners to check out our book right now on Amazon and help out the show. So we're completely thrilled by this book, and we've been working on it in a very dedicated way for the last, 18 months?
I would say so, yeah.
Yeah, and so we figured we'd describe a little bit of what it's all about and to whom it'll appeal and how this project got started.
Well, I'll give you a quick answer to that, to whom it will appeal. I'm going to say everybody.
Everybody. God. Every target demographic. So we got 65-year-old women. Yeah, sure. Why not?
Everyone loves a good rip-roaring action film, don't they?
I know, I certainly do. What can you tell me about how, I guess, the world of action movie cinema has affected your life, and when did you first connect with it?
Well, why don't we start off by talking about the genesis of the book first, and then we'll get into that.
Sure, I guess we'll probably touch on that. Way back when, I had this media job that, as you well know, was all over the map in terms of working nights and weekends and all that, and inevitably, I think it was TBS, Turner Broadcasting, or Fox, one of these crappy networks would show almost every Sunday, every Saturday, some 80s, early 90s Steven Seagal effort, whether this was Hard to Kill or Under Siege or one of these things. And invariably, when I would turn on the TV, and there were TVs in my office all over the place because I was paid to monitor the media and watch TV, and me and my good buddy, Paul Mancuso, to whom our book is dedicated, we would catch these Seagal epic films, and we would always ask one another, okay, in jest, but in truth, what is he this time? Is he an ex-Special Forces fighter? Is he an ex-DEA official? Or is he an ex-CIA official? Because he's nothing else. So it was the same, and when you go through his IMDb page, he's an ex-CIA covert op in, I would say, 60 to 70% of his films. And it's fun. And, you know, this, we were just killing ourselves laughing with, like, how, well, first off, how crummy an actor he is. But second, just how fun these movies are, and Hard to Kill, which actually inspired the title of our book. And, you know, Seagal is in this epic fight in a convenience store bodega, and some generic goon is pointing a rifle at him. And Seagal says,
I know what you're thinking. It's not fair. Mine's bigger than yours.
Yeah, life isn't fair, right? And yeah, so Seagal has... His output has deteriorated considerably, to say the least,
well,
in the last 20 years.
His input has increased considerably. I'm talking about his input into his throat and his belly.
That's true. It's definitely
but
diminished.
His output, in terms of the sheer number of movies he's releasing, I mean, the guy's got about 10 straight-to-video movies coming out every year.
It's funny. Last night, in fact, I was watching this film called End of a Gun, which is, I think, a 2016 effort.
It's hilarious because back in the day, I mean, the guy never used guns. He used his fists and feet. Those were his lethal weapons. And now that he's become the human itineration of the Pillsbury Doughboy, he's just guns.
I like to think he was socially distanced ahead of his time, you know, but... this was so ridiculous because, you know, Pulp Fiction has like a opening credits that's like 5 minutes long, goes on for fucking ever. Well, End of a Gun, every production company is rattled off. There must have been at least 15 after Lionsgate, none of which I'd heard of. And I was thinking,
well, how many of those were based in Belarus?
He's definitely the king of the Eastern Europe straight-to-video market. This one was lensed actually in Paris. So, but it's not going to conjure up, you know, images of Woody Allen's Midnight in Paris or anything, but it's the most beautifully situated film he's ever done. But my God, it's just so bad. He connects with a woman I initially thought was a honeypot, so like enticing him into something, but it's actually a partner, you know, like one of these cop buddy type movies, and she helps him like steal money back from a drug dealer. But the age difference between the two was so shocking, and the guy must be, what, 65 years old, and this woman was incredibly hot, and it just, I didn't buy any of it, not to mention his glacial action scenes, which just, they looked like they're stunt doubles all over the place.
The deterioration of Seagal is nothing short of incredible. I mean, I recall when I first saw Steven Seagal, I believe it was Above the Law, I saw it in a theater, I think it was about 14. And this was a new action star for a new decade. This was no longer the muscle-bound, lumbering sort of Stallone, Schwarzenegger-type beast. This was a lean, lithe, karate-killing machine, you know? Like, this is a guy who would go into a bar fight, nary a weapon, just his fists and feet. And, I mean, the snapping of the limbs, left, right, center, and just come going in there, just this thin, aquiline features. I wonder, it was with the ponytail. I mean, it was something else. And those snap of the limbs, I mean, that was something that he brought to the action space that was brand new. And it was incredible. The man was a dynamo, and he was followed up not too long by another new breed of action star, Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Oh, indeed. And so we should say, I guess both of these gentlemen feature prominently in our book, but we go beyond the usual
mainstream
iconic one name and you recognize them, but also include the likes of Brian Thompson, who's got kind of a square jaw and is in Hired to Kill, along with a very drunk Oliver Reed. But also
Brian Thompson, perhaps best known for his role as, I was going to say the Night Stalker, but it's a Night Slasher in Cobra.
Oh, my
He's
God.
A villain in Cobra.
Yeah,
yep.
Yeah, you're right. Oh, my God. Sorry, I just have a bad image associated with the Night Stalker because I've been suffering through the latest season of American Horror Story. It had the Night Stalker, a real life killer, paired with like a hybrid of Jason Voorhees and Michael Myers, and the two of them working together to kill people in a summer camp. It is freaking terrible, but that's an aside. I was also going to say the incredible Reb Brown.
Reb Brown. I mean, this guy's got to be in about, what, four or five entries in our book?
Yes, indeed. And, I mean, he's just... Strike Commando has to be one of the most iconic action films ever. And, you know, you can't help but at least want to shout, Jakota, to yourself. Yeah, at least one. And, but also...
Jokonski! Jokonski! It's like Taste Great, Less Filling. No, it's Marikonski.
But also Brent Huff, who really helped us in actually sourcing the cover material, and of course was the star of the even less heralded sequel to Strike Commando, Strike Commando 2. Which...
Because you know that Strike Commando 1 won all the Oscars that year, so it's heralded from here to Timbuktu. But...
Well, at least it's heralded by those of us who just really appreciate piss-poor knockoffs of more well-known products on these shores.
Rambo,
and in that
one,
case,
part two, okay.
Rambo and all that kind of thing. But yeah, so we've got, and also the likes of perennial star of, you know, Filipino knockoffs, Vic Diaz, who seems...
Cherubic Vic Diaz.
Yes, who, while not an action star per se, rolls his portly self into so many different productions of all stripes. So, yeah. So we're really hoping that this book really resonates with people, and especially folks who are really into the human meme, Chuck Norris, but also like the amazing canon produced films in the 80s, of which there are, again, many in this book that we showcase. So,
yeah. Well, yeah, I was just also going to say another person that's in our book, numerous times. In fact, I believe that this person handily wins the award for appearing in the most entries in our book. You know who I'm talking about.
Cameron Mitchell?
Cameron Mitchell, B-movie stalwart Cameron Mitchell. The guy's got to be in at least a dozen movies that are in our book.
Oh, he's an amazing guy. I mean, I was thinking, like, Christopher Lee has, what, a Guinness Book of World Records list of IMDb credits, for, like, 250 long, followed probably by Vincent Price. Cameron Mitchell has to be up there in the high, like, 170s or 180s. Like, you can't swing a dead cat without hitting some, you know, ridiculous 80s horror schlock film or action film without seeing his, you know, unique visage.
In the 80s and 90s, you couldn't swing a dead cat in any horror or action section of any video store without hitting some direct-to-video release starring, I believe I call him in the book, the staff of life for these films, Cameron Mitchell.
Well, and who else helped bring the book to life is our pal Brian Trenchard-Smith. And so he's featured in, I guess, write-ups about Stunt Rock and Strike of the Panther. But he's done other genre films as well, and we should give him a shout-out for his own book.
Adventures in the B-Movie Trade.
Yes, that, a great title. And so we connected with him through our mutual love of the genre, and he reached out to us to ask about the book biz, and we're happy to report that, we're both going to order it, I think, this week if you haven't already, but that's... I mean, Australia is such a wellspring of films of this type as well. It has its own...
Exploitation, yeah.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, we are thrilled to have him write the foreword for us for our book. And it's really bizarre because we actually failed to reference the genesis of Mine's Bigger Than Yours. And he was the one who actually pointed it out in our foreword. And we didn't... You know, we would have gone without having mentioned it, and it would have left a lot of people in the dark, I think. So kudos
to him.
The
title.
Oh, yeah, the title of our book, and it was like, man.
Yeah, it's funny. Like, I recall, I'm going to take a little credit for coming up with the title, and I came up with it independently of realizing it wasn't that Seagal film. I think you and I were just sort of brainstorming one day what to call this book. We had the idea. We had the concept. Obviously, post Death by Umbrella, the 100 Weirdest Horror Movie Weapons, we wanted to write a follow-up. And, on the Really Off Movies podcast, we talk about genre films of all stripes. I mean, it's not just horror films. We talk about musicals. We talk about WIP films, etc. And, of course, we talk about action movies. So what better than a follow-up to our very well-received last book, Death by Umbrella, than a book about our second love, action movies. And we came up with this concept of the 100 wackiest action movies, I think inspired by some of the movies you're seeing at the time, like Miami Connection and Dangerous Men and, you know, so many. And as you were saying before, all those crazy canon features, Death Wish 3, of course, features prominently in our book, et cetera, et cetera. And we were just sort of spitballing titles back and forth. And I came up with Mine's Bigger Than Yours, and I was thinking, what's bigger? Bigger biceps, bigger guns, bigger explosions. In the world of action cinema, everything is big, 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 big. So Mine's Bigger Than Yours, it can mean so many different things.
And luckily, I guess, Hard to Kill with, again, the aforementioned fight scene. But, and then we juxtaposed that on top of a big gun. And again, our favorite, probably if you had to pick like one of our top 3 to 5 entries in the whole 100, and we're just teasing a few of them, of course, but that would be Strike Commando, because it's just Reb Brown is such an iconic figure. And I mean, juxtaposing his giant muscles with that really high-pitched voice and his goofy corncob, Midwestern persona, it's really, like, you can see why he really failed to take off in a way that Stallone did not.
It's funny you say Hard to Kill, because we got Hard to Kill, we got Hired to Kill, we got Wired to Kill.
Yeah. And the book is really inspired by, I guess, what we called Seagal's three-name oeuvre, when he was really hitting his stride, which was, of course, you know, Above the Law and Hard to Kill. So that's when, but then things went into a tailspin for him. But those were really the iconic films that really helped juice this book.
Well, it's funny. I just picked up my author's copy right now, and I just flipped open to a page, and you, just as you're saying the word iconic, and I see the entry on this page, it's page 16, Jim Cotta. How can you not get more iconic when it comes to wacky action films than Jim Cotta? You wrote this entry, and it's great. I love it.
Well, I mean, it stands head and shoulders apart from any other pommel horse-themed films in cinema history.
Oh, without a doubt.
I mean, this goes without saying. I mean, unless I'm missing out that Citizen Kane pommel horse fight scene. It's been a while since I've seen that one. But, yeah, that one has made its way into the popular vernacular through the likes of Seth MacFarlane and Family Guy. It's just such a delight and such an absurd... I mean, it's so wacky. And what's so amazing about our book is that's not even in the top five wackiest films. I mean, we have the one-armed executioner. We have crippled Avengers with martial arts being perpetrated by a bunch of people who are either blind, mute, or infirm. I mean, it is really wacky.
We got Robo Vampire, we got Rotor, we got tons and tons of wacky goodness in this tome.
And speaking of wacky, I mean, we failed to mention, I mean, the king of the pastiche movie, quasi-pornographer Godfrey Ho.
Godfrey Ho, the director of Robo-Vampire, yeah.
And again, kudos for Brian Trenchard-Smith for bringing him up in the intro as well. But, I mean, that guy would just cobble together X-rated films with everything. I think his output also has at least 50% of which has Ninja in the title. So we got Ninja Holocaust, City Ninja. I mean, you name it. This guy's the king of the ninjas.
Indeed. And we got American Ninja in there too. So because even if these films don't scream wacky when you hear about it, there's elements that are wacky.
Oh, for
they
sure.
Make them wacky.
Oh, well, I was thinking of back when video stores were still... We're still an active and contributor to the popular zeitgeist. There was our pal at Suspect Video showcasing a particularly exemplary film that is the brainchild of auteur and solicitor in L.A.
Yeah. Forget.
Yeah, this is Mr. John DeHart and his movie Get Even.
Or Get Evan,
you know, sick, S-I-C, a.k.a. Road to Revenge, which is one of the most batshit wild movies and is, I think, the room of the genre. You know, followed closely maybe by Cracker Jack 3.
Yep, for sure. And we guys, the reason why we're saying Get Evan or Get Even is because the title, even those two words, they're linked together. There's no space, and it's in quotation marks for some crazy reason. So just the title alone makes it worthy of inclusion in our book.
Oh,
and yet
yeah.
There's so much more to Get Evan, Get Even, Get Even, Good Evening.
Good evening. Good evening, Squire, yeah.
It's jaw-dropping, hilarious, and wacky, and off the charts. It's a vanity project for Mr. DeHart, and man, oh, man, does he have a lot of vanity to display?
To spread around, yeah.
Well, his katas and his singing and his line dancing and his soliloquy reading of William Shakespeare and, too much.
Satanic Panic exposition, but we don't want to spoil that one. We urge everyone to see that for sure. But it's the broader themes, the ones that undercut and underpin the films in this space, regardless of whether they're big budget, star-driven vehicles, or some misbegotten piece of tripe in the Philippines that has Filipinos passed off as Japanese people. Mm-hmm. But there are certain themes that keep coming to a head that we've seen time and time again in action films that we just thought had to be linked together in a cohesive thread. And I'm thinking, I just saw it last night in End of a Gun, the ubiquitous warehouse shootout. And I don't know where, like, who is doing security for these warehouses, but you can just pop a door open easily and get involved in some firefight to the death and it doesn't matter if it's in a big city or out in the country. And this even comes to a head, I think, in Sons of Anarchy and all types of shows. It doesn't even matter if it's in the genre, but particularly in action.
Michael. Oh, yeah. And in the book, we talk about the surfeit of abandoned warehouses in the United States of America. They're just sitting there waiting for shooting. Not to mention the number of warehouses, but the number of railings within the warehouses.
And not to mention factories as well, like with the likes of RoboCop. And this was this way predated Donald Trump's attempts to bring back manufacturing jobs. So I don't know how these facilities are all available to people, but my God. And then there's also, it goes without saying that you have to have your zingers. and your one-liners. Before a beatdown, you have to dispense with some sort of wisdom that these films became known for, and there's a whole slew that we're going to get touch on in the book, and we're not going to spoil them too much here, but some of these themes that just keep recurring.
So many tropes, so many cliches. One of my favorites is the hero and the villain after an hour and a half of locking horns, trying to destroy one another. They have sort of a bonding moment.
You know, the two of us, Jeff, you know.
We're not that different, you and I.
No, you know.
Perhaps in other circumstances, we could have been friends. We could have gone for a cappuccino together and said, I'm going to blow your brains out.
Yeah, it's almost like in the Great Wars where the Germans and the English soldiers would sing Christmas songs to one another. But yeah, they could have been friends if the circumstances were just slightly different. It's such a damn shame. Also, we were talking early in the book's genesis about henchmen, and I was sort of speculating as to how they would source the talent for this, because it's such a vital profession, and yet, short of, I don't know what, like putting out an ad in Craigslist, but I don't know how you would staff henchmen.
Well, it's funny you say it's such a vital profession. It is vital. I mean, every arch-villain needs a whole group of henchmen, but not very vital henchmen. They're not. A, they don't really have much of a life expectancy. They're sort of like the red shirts on Star Trek. And second of all, they're not the healthiest sort.
Well, in the 80s,
they're before, like the muscle tone be found on many an 80s henchman.
It's true. Well, this was before, and I think this was common in professional sports as well, before training regimens completely began to dominate sports and athletics of all stripes, you were pretty much left to medicine balls and Monty Burns-style workouts. But like, these guys, yeah, were really rail thin, fairly useless. And you'd think, like, if you were an international drug dealer holed up on an island compound, you would at least insist upon previous military experience for some of your guys, but that is clearly absent in most cases because they always get behind one another single file without spreading out. And as we know from horror films, well, maybe not, but if you're all grouped together, you're just easy pickings for the likes of Jason Voorhees, right? Similarly, you're going to be mowed down in a jungle milieu. So spread out, gentlemen, you know?
Mm-hmm. I think henchman, we were bandying it, but wasn't that one of our original titles had the word henchman in it? It's hard out there for a henchman. That's what
And that's, I guess, a good decade after that infamous rap song won the Oscar. But I think it's hard out there for anything is way past its before date. So
it's good, thing we didn't go with that one of it, ultimately, because that would have instantly dated our book by 20 years.
And now, speaking of military men, now we have a table of contents where we divide it as best we could into different sections. Now, of course,
so similar to Death by Umbrella. I mean, we got to say that it's not, even though it's the 100 wackiest action movies, it's not ranked from 100 to 1. It's just they're all together. They're all equally deserving of the wacky title in amongst their own right.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And so what we have is, of course, though a chapter dedicated to those who serve. And I mean serve in the military capacity, not further our interests in just being in a bad action movie and serving our purposes. But so we definitely have, what is it, enlisted men. Mm-hmm. And then we do tap into the most, I guess the subgenre which has the most films in it, which would be, broadly speaking, karate and martial arts. So ain't that a kick in the head? And then, but we also tackle some dystopian hell as well.
Well, let's go in order. So we have Ain't That a Kick in the Head. That's the first chapter. That's after the wonderful foreword by Brian Trenchard-Smith in our introduction. Ain't That a Kick in the Head. The aforementioned Jim Cotta is in there. We'll just say maybe two or three titles. We don't want to give away the entire thing. Mm-hmm. American Ninja's in there. And let's pick one more, Chris.
No Retreat, No Surrender.
A movie replete with retreating and surrendering. That was called No Retreat, No Surrender.
And if you've thought Jean-Claude Van Damme has been typecast in perpetuity for being a Frenchman or a Belgian because of his marble mouth accent, well, prior to that, you'll be glad to know that he played a Russian supervillain. So, yeah.
He was even billed as the Russian.
Fantastic.
So, yeah, and then our next chapter after that is Dystopian Hell, and these are all your post-apocalyptic films and so on. So one of the titles that is coming out of me is Land of Doom.
Yes.
Land of Doom with Harmony. I can take care of myself. That's another cliche.
Oh, yeah. I can. That's typically, as it was the case in Land of Doom, but it's with a female sidekick. And when she becomes separated from the muscle-bound behemoth with an Easter Island head, she usually proclaims in defiance, "I can take care of myself," which is resolutely never the case. But still, well, never say never, as we'll see in other chapters. But yeah, dystopian hell. We got Rotor, the fantastic dystopian robotic AI movie, way ahead of its time.
Where you make a robotic policeman, and you feel fit to give him a mustache, a Ned Flanders-esque mustache.
And David Carradine in the Future Force with his just beer gut protruding, even with a 140-pound skinny frame, really disturbing. He gets a prosthetic arm that he uses to beat down bad guys. It's pretty bad. And
it's like a cannon on his arm, isn't it?
It is indeed.
Following that, we got kick-ass women. We got to include the kick-ass women.
Yeah, and really all women are kick-ass, but literally they're kick-ass here, as we've got the likes of, Corman produced exploitation like Firecracker and TNT Jackson, where the martial arts is, let's say, socially distanced as well.
and definitely socially distanced.
Particularly in the case of TNT Jackson, which just like swing and a miss, where you can see the just huge gaps between the perp and the protagonist.
Following that, there's the aforementioned Enlisted Men.
Ooh, yes, and the Enlisted Men. So you got, well, of course, it's just replete with all these kinds of mercenary fighters and strike commando deadly prey types. Followed by Revenge is a dish best served in this chapter. And
yes,
you may say that revenge is a staple of every action movie, but this one in particular, it's all about vengeance and doling it out. And so there you have crippled Avengers, Death Force, which...
rolling vengeance.
Ned Beatty is in that one, wearing a ridiculously undersized leather vest. I mean, it's just unbelievable. The next one, I mean, a little bit of a crowbar with this one, but My Fist, Your Face, which is, instead of having a specific martial arts, like Seagal and his propensity to bend back hands, always, in every Seagal film, he bends back a hand, like, 45 degrees. Has to appear in every scene.
Does he still do that?
That's the one thing he still can do, because he can't lift his leg above his knee. So, I mean, you're left to this kind of... And always, like, it makes you wonder. Like, Aikido is pretty limiting, right? Like, it is solely dependent upon your antagonist grasping for your limb. So no one ever decides to punch Seagal. They always reach out for his lapels. Like, I don't know why. They just want to shake him because they're so angry with his terrible acting. But, like, if you want to beat up Seagal, kick him in the kneecaps. But anyway, My Fist, Your Face is more about punching movies. And that you get stuff like The Condemned with the very unversatile Stone Cold Steve Austin. And the likes of No Holds Barred, one of your personal favorites.
Yep, no, oh yeah, well, I mean, I've come around to it. When I saw it in the theater as a young kid, oh my God, did that movie disillusion me like no other. I've come around to it over the years, and it's one of my favorite write-ups, is No Holds Barred.
And Firestorm, the, Howie Long, ex-NFL, stalwart with his cement head, just as a firefighter, battling forest fires, just truly a standout for that chapter. And then, of course, you have the long arm of the law. When you talk about Seagal being a lawman, and he was for a brief time, a very brief time on television as a sheriff, but he's in there in Hard to Kill, and then we got this auteur Iranian production, Dangerous Men, again with cops all over the place. Hard Ticket to Hawaii.
Love Hard Ticket to Hawaii.
Just a very bizarre, like, guy who lives on a boat action movie. Just, it's, you can't even, you have to see it for yourself.
Andy Sidaris flick.
Oh yeah, the great Andy Sidaris. And then Shotgun, one of our mutual favorites, of just one of the great exploitation action films of all time, featuring a basher who's into S&M and sort of a Lethal Weapon knockoff of these two imbeciles who have to go after this killer. And there's just continuity errors and stunt errors galore. One of the great films as well.
Mm-hmm. Now, we should be saying, of course, these are just samples of some of the titles. We're not giving away the whole kit and caboodle. You got to buy the book.
For sure. And we were debating whether to touch on the superhero genre, because it's just, that's the, I mean, the driving force behind box office the last 5 years, I would say.
Yeah.
And so we decided to throw in some films that really fail to take off in the way the Avengers movies have, and they're really quite the opposite.
It's funny because we have in this chapter, which is entitled Superheroes, mm-hmm. we have a Captain America movie, we have Wonder Woman, we have The Punisher, we have, you might think to yourself, well, wait, these are big budget movies, but no, we have the earlier versions of these films, the low budget versions of these films, Captain America 2, Death Too Soon, which was a TV movie, disguised as a backdoor pilot for a TV series starring Reb Brown and Christopher Lee. The original Wonder Woman movie starring Kathy Lee Crosby, not Linda Carter, not Gal Gadot, but Kathy Lee Crosby as Wonder Woman.
You gotta love the deep dives we have into that. And while the Batman logo may be recognized the world over, I mean, it's got to be up there with the McDonald's logo at this point, but certainly not the Puma Man logo.
Puma Man, yep. The movie that Donald Pleasance said, and this is a man with a large filmography, Donald Pleasance cites as the worst film of his entire career, and he was in Halloween's 5 and 6, so, I mean, those are pretty awful movies. So.
Yeah, and the Puma Man was not a cash-in to the, you know, the shoe brand of the same name, unfortunately. I don't think it might have been. And then lastly, of course, I mean, again, a shout out to Seagal. That's, oh my God, the man is just so integral to this book. It's, but we've got covert ops. And as I said, Seagal is always a black ops or a former CIA special ops player. So obviously he's going to be involved in this too. And we've got Half Past Dead, which pretty much describes his career, but also
at the time and still now, yeah.
Yes, but also the incredible Invasion USA with the inestimable denim-clad ass-kicker himself, Chuck Norris. Amazing, amazing stuff. Stone Cold with
Virus. Don't forget Virus.
Virus and, I mean, Brian Bosworth. It's we'd be remiss if we didn't give him a shout-out. Failed football player, terrible mullet, spiky blonde hair. Flame out in the NFL, but certainly not in the... Oh, maybe in the action world, too. But not before giving us one of my favorites, Stone Cold. I did catch recently A Force of One, which I wanted to podcast with you, which has characters just being aghast at this nascent thing called karate that was happening in the 70s. And it's really amazing. And Chuck Norris is enlisted by a police precinct to instruct its officers in the martial art. So it really is amazing how this sea change happened. I think spurred largely by Bruce Lee, but also to some extent blaxploitation and
everybody was kung fu fighting.
Yeah, they indeed were, and even more so. And I mean, at least the likes of Chuck Norris had the goods, and he was a karate champion, and he's a multi black belt in different disciplines, and the same cannot be said about the likes of TNT Jackson, that's for sure, or Firecracker. So it's, but he really helped bring the goods with Bruce Lee, and there was just a surge in interest in martial arts movies, and I think there's going to be a rekindling of it thanks to the UFC. So maybe we'll see a new golden era of action movies, but I'm not entirely sure if that'll be the case. Either way, what we try to do here is, while we do focus on the golden era, roughly from 1978 to 1988, plenty of 2000s and even efforts from the last 2 or 3 years.
For sure. Yep. I mean, we try to be as comprehensive as possible, just as we did with Death by Umbrella. We try to stuff it with a bit of everything.
Definitely, although I'm a little bit worried we weren't as completist as we were with Death by Umbrella, because Umbrella is as complete as any book there is. I'm never surprised by a new weapon that I've seen in a horror film that we didn't already cover. So,
let's put it this way. I mean, there are thousands of wacky action movies. Mm-hmm. Just by the very nature of the genre and the testosterone involved and so on, and the oversized weapons and the machismo and this and that.
The undersized vocabulary, that's for sure.
The undersized, I mean, they're, most action movies have some sort of wacky element in them. What we try to do is sort of skim off the top and, you know, the cream of the crop, the wackiest of the wacky. And there's going to be some people who might take umbrage with something that we included and say, hey, I don't think that's too wacky. Read our write-up and you'll see it is pretty wacky. And then there's going to be people who say, why is this film not included? Well, hey, every action movie worth its salt has a sequel. And this book, I mean, hey, I'm more than happy to get on a sequel. I mean, this hasn't come out yet, but it'll be out very shortly.
Agreed. Also, every action movie worth its salt has a bunch of henchmen who just are so indefatigable or so hell-bent on doing their duty for their overlords that they just will, in succession, try and take on a hero who has beaten down three or four of their colleagues prior. Like, that really is, I think, the most amazing thing about action films. Like,
the
nobody
and dedication of these henchmen, yes.
It's amazing. Like, if you and I try to fight someone and someone beat this living tar out of you, I'm not going to go run in after. Well, okay, that's a bad example. Maybe I would for you, but if I saw you and like three or four of our other buddies and getting beat like a rented mule, I'm not going in. I'm going to turn tail and run. You know, I mean, discretion and valor and all that stuff. But these guys, my God. And again, one in a row instead of surrounding the guy.
Japanese discipline of one at a time in every kung fu movie, you know? There's like 30 men versus one man, and yet it's of all 30 just piling on the one protagonist and beating the shit out of him. It's one at a time. And they just get their – one watches the other get their ass kicked, and they go in fearlessly to get their ass kicked yet again. This is pretty amazing.
It's almost like 18th century warfare in the like Napoleonic Wars, where you just almost as a gentleman, you would, you know, the two generals would agree to meet on such and such a plane. And then you say, hey, I'll see you there. So maybe there's some sort of chivalry that we don't know about. You know, these guys want to show off their own fisticuffs and bona fides.
Yeah, for sure. And so I got to say, man, I mean, I'm not trying to toot our own horn or anything, but we worked really hard on this book. And I think it's a damn good book. I think our efforts have come to fruition. I think it's a great book, a real fun read with a lot of interesting information contained therein.
Yeah, so it's not just, much like in our horror book, the approach is to have a comedic bent, but also offer a lot of cogent observations, but also a bunch of factoids and referencing all sorts of different figures from philosophy, from psychology.
Philosophizers,
yeah. you name it, to literary figures. Like, we really infuse this book with a bunch of references. So it's not just your standard shoot 'em up stuff or Chuck Norris type meme, but we really do reference a whole slew of different figures, and I think it'll surprise a lot of people by being smarter than the title would indicate.
Yep. So I gotta say, Chris, if I had one wish for this world, I have lots of wishes.
Okay.
But one wish is that, yes, I would love it if people would buy our book. I think it's the book that we need at this time. It's going to bring joy into the hearts of people.
Yeah, I mean, it really will. With the likes of Roadhouse and Lockup, these restore your soul in these difficult times. They're mainstream hits, but they are also undeniably just totally misguided and yet incredibly lovable. And I would throw Stone Cold in there as well. But again, we tried to cover as many different types of films as we could. And we belabored it, and we fought over it, and we tried to whittle it down to the ones that really, really were deserving of their space. But by the same, even if you know, our readers take umbrage, we at least try and write up every entry to the best of our ability and make it as fun and informative as we could have.
Mm-hmm, for sure. So buy our book.
Buy our book. yeah. Shameful plug. And continue to enjoy episodes of the Really Awful Movies podcast, uploaded for your listening pleasure every Friday, and we shall talk to you soon.
Take care. Thank you.